Welcome to Action Phase. I'm your host, Tegan Keating. This week, I'm going to try something a little different, and I'm going to talk with you about eating disorders in light of it being National Eating Disorders Awareness Week. And but before I get started, First of all, I'm going to give you a big old trigger warning here. If you are suffering from, recovering from, if eating disorders are a difficult emotional topic for you, please don't listen. I don't want you to have some kind of... Please don't listen. It's not worth your mental health for you to listen to this if it's going to trigger you. So, that being said, if you're interested in learning more about eating disorders, this hopefully will be an informative and interesting podcast for you. But first, before I get started, I want to give a quick shout out to those of you who left me some iTunes feedback. It's very exciting. Finally, I'm showing up on ratings, which is exciting. So, thanks to Greg Kaplan, Public Health Phoebe, Sherry AO, and Public Health Nerd, who we know from last week, she was the guest, and she's great. So thanks guys so much. And then there were also, it looks like, four other people who gave me ratings, like star ratings, but didn't write any kind of feedback. So thanks you guys so much for doing that. You know, as if you're new this week and you like the show, give me a couple stars, you're doing a great job message, something like that. That'd be cool. So, anyway, on with National Eating Disorders Week. I'm going to use the NEDA, National Eating Disorders Association, I think it's Association, as my primary source of, like, hard facts and information. So if I'm giving you a statistic, if I'm giving you some kind of, you know, like, definition of something, that's where it's coming from, unless I tell you otherwise. So first of all, let's talk about eating disorders, what they are, what they look like, what they mean, that type of stuff. Okay, so first of all, we have anorexia nervosa and bulimia nervosa. Then there are a couple others that are a little bit less well known, or like really not known at all. So there's binge eating disorder. There's what's called otherwise specified feeding or eating disorder, which I believe used to be called eating disorder not otherwise specified. I guess they must have changed that in the DSM-5. And then there's other things that I, you know, really knew nothing about until I started researching, something called diabulimia and orthorexia, which is something that I had heard about but didn't really know exactly what it was. And okay, so let's talk about them individually. First, we have anorexia nervosa. Now, this is kind of like the classic refusing to eat kind of eating disorder. This is the one that when people talk about somebody with an eating disorder, it's where people's minds jump. So you're just not eating enough and your weight is plummeting. And there's two types. So there's the binge eating and purging type, which means that, it's anorexia, you're not eating enough, and then sometimes you're binging and purging. And then there's another type, which is called restricting, which doesn't, you know, you don't have any of that binging and purging stuff. It's characterized by, like, an overwhelming fear of weight gain and, like, being obsessed with your weight, and you're just, like, always doing behaviors to try to keep you from gaining weight and to continue to lose weight. And you're really tied up in, your self-esteem is tied up in body image. And you just don't see how serious the situation has gotten. You just don't see yourself as thin as you actually are, even if you're, like, really dangerously underweight. Then we have bulimia nervosa. So I think that it's important to talk about bulimia and binge eating disorder kind of together, not because they're the same, but because they're easily confused. So bulimia is characterized by binging, which is like eating an enormous amount of food in a very short amount of time, like more food than a person can reasonably consume in a 2-hour period. And then purging it, and that can be either like through vomiting or through using laxatives or through exercise. There's lots of different ways that people use to purge. And that is like really like, it's almost like being in a trance state, like you're totally out of control when you're having these binges. Binge eating disorder is much like bulimia, but it's the binging without the purging. It's the same like out of control kind of trance state that you would find in somebody with bulimia. The National Eating Disorders Association says that the health risks of a binge eating disorder are the ones that are associated with obesity, because in general those are comorbid. They happen at the same time. So you've got your high blood pressure, high cholesterol, heart disease, diabetes, gallbladder disease, all that kind of stuff. And binge eating is the most common eating disorder. Yeah, that's right. Binge eating disorder is the most common eating disorder. That, I can't say that enough. People who are eating so much, so quickly, totally out of control about how much and how quickly they're putting food into their bodies, who don't feel like they can control what they're eating. That's the most common thing. Up to 5% of the general population can suffer from this, might be suffering from this. It's like a 60-40 split female-male. So men are just as affected as women. This is a huge problem. Not only because the eating disorder itself is destructive, but because if we're looking at obesity on a population level, we've got to look at binge eating disorder. Other specified feeding or eating disorder. And that is kind of where you have symptoms of disordered eating, but you don't fit nicely into somebody's criteria, which I think often happens for people, because every person is different. The thing that kind of makes all of these other specified disorders, the thing that kind of ties them all together, is that there's so much emotional and psychological suffering that's attached to them. And I mean, one of the things that's most important is like, if you feel, or you feel like your loved one has something wrong, like if you feel that something's not right, just because they don't fit into these categories of what an eating disorder is, doesn't mean that you or they don't deserve help. Like, just because you aren't at 85% of the recommended BMI for your height and age, doesn't mean that the fact that you're not eating is okay. that's not how it works. So if you're concerned about yourself or somebody else for any reason, like definitely 100% seek out help. And we'll talk about how to find some help in a little bit. So there's two other disorders that I think are worth mentioning. There's one called diabulimia, which is when it occurs when people who have type 1 diabetes, and it, you know, it's interesting, the website specifically says type 1 diabetes, but I wonder if this happens with people who have type 2 diabetes as well. So this is when people take less insulin to cause them to lose weight. So they're basically abusing insulin to cause weight loss. That's not good, because you are messing with your ability, like with your blood glucose levels. Not good. Get help if that's what's going on. There's a whole list of terrible things that happen to you. I mean, you can, everything from bacterial skin infections to liver disease to stroke to coma to death. Like, this is serious stuff. So if you or someone you know is using your insulin to hopefully shed a couple pounds, like, let's get you some help. The last one, and the one that I think is, like, so interesting and, like, walks such a fine line for so many people is orthorexia. And to be clear, orthorexia is not, like, an identified eating disorder in the DSM-5, you know, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. Orthorexia is, like, it's when you become so obsessed with eating healthy food that you cease to think about anything else. Like, you know that, like, every morning the healthiest thing for you to eat is, like, egg whites and oatmeal and blueberries, and you're gonna eat that every morning, and if you can't eat that, then, like, your whole day falls apart. And, like, you're, like, so fixated on, like, eating the right thing. And it's not, like, the goal is not necessarily thinness, but the goal is health. And that's what's so confusing about it. It's, like, I think that a lot of what we talk about with eating disorders and the media in quotes, particularly when we're talking about social media, is, like, the shift from talking about just wanting to be thin to wanting to be healthy. And I mean, people have written plenty of stuff online about this, about the, like, new strong is the new skinny, like, inspirational stuff on Pinterest that, like, girls love to pin and, like, share on Tumblr and stuff. And you know, guys do too. And I'm not saying this doesn't affect guys. It absolutely does. But I think that we've kind of gotten a little sneakier about it. We have, like, lots of these images floating around Pinterest and Tumblr, and I'm sure on Twitter. I don't run in those Twitter circles, so I don't know. Of, like, you know, a very, like, muscular, sweaty body with, like, the words strong is the new skinny, or sweat is fat crying, or, you know, keep going till it hurts, or no, like, what is it? It's, like, there's something about, like, pain is the only way to, like, get stronger or whatever. And that stuff is crazy. Like, that is not, those are not the thoughts of a healthy person who has respect for their body and what it can do. Like, yes, you should be pushing yourself with physical exercise, especially if you have a sedentary lifestyle. Like, yes, you should be using your body and working out and breaking a sweat. But you should not be working out until it hurts and then keep going. Like, if you're in pain, you're supposed to stop. That's not healthy. That's unhealthy. So some of the questions that that they say are good to ask yourself to see if you've kind of, like, crossed over from being interested in your health and making healthy changes into this kind of orthorexia mindset. It's things like, do you wish that occasionally you could just eat and not worry about food quality? So, like, do you ever just wish that you could eat a cheeseburger, but you just can't do it? Are you able to eat a meal prepared by somebody else? This is a huge one. And this is, like, I'll be honest. There was a time in my life where I read a lot of, like, healthy living bloggers. You know, like, the people who, like, ostensibly have some kind of life but don't really actually seem to, like, have a life outside of making themselves meals and going for runs. I used to read a bunch of these. And And that's kind of like what their life was like. Like, they wouldn't eat anything that wasn't prepared by them. They wouldn't eat like anything that didn't fit into like these very specific boxes that they said were okay. And some of them, like, over time, like, if you read them for a couple of years, and I kind of check in every once in a while to see like what's up with them now, you can see how it's changed. So like one of them, when I first started reading her, like, she was totally into raw food. And then she was like, not so much into raw food anymore. And then she would only eat egg whites. And now she eats like one egg yolk. And she's also gluten-free, except sometimes she's not. I don't know. But these kinds of messages that are out there, these people writing this stuff and like kind of putting their lives on a pedestal as like, this is how to be healthy. Giving nutrition advice, giving exercise advice, posting their training plans so other people can see how much they work out. That is definitely part of this like healthy to unhealthy transition. And I would imagine that for a lot of people, consuming that kind of media is really dangerous. Let's talk about the prevalence of these diseases. So if we group all eating disorders together, there are approximately 30 million people suffering from eating disorders. That's men, women of all races, ethnicities, everything. We're talking the whole gamut of people. This is not just for white women. That's a huge myth. Compare that to Alzheimer's, 5.1 million people. Autism, 3.6 million people. Schizophrenia, 3.4 million people. So there's, that's crazy. It's really, that's shocking to me. 30 million people in the United States have eating disorders. 30 million people. And how do we fund research for them? So the NIH spent $88 per Alzheimer's patient for research. It was $81 for schizophrenia, for autism, $44. For eating disorders, they spent only 93 cents on research per person. So eating disorders got $28 million worth of research. And you compare that to Alzheimer's disease, $450 million. Eating disorders are so prevalent and they're so dangerous. They are the single most dangerous psychiatric illness that exists. More people die from eating disorders than any other psychiatric illness. And we're only investing $28 million in researching how to help and prevent people from getting them. That is insane and it is unconscionable. Let's do a little exercise. Since you're listening to this, I want you to close your eyes. And I want you to imagine an inpatient eating disorder facility. And I mean, we can kind of like from pop culture, we can all kind of imagine what that might be like, you know, like a nice comfortable room with lots of light and plants, lots of couches, and maybe like five or six people sitting on couches, like talking with a therapist and, you know, like a group therapy kind of thing. And now, what do those people look like? Are they white? Are they female? If they're not white and female, then you are very well educated and very progressive. Because for most people, that's the stereotype. Like, eating disorders occur only or primarily in wealthy white women. And that's not true. That is absolutely not true. However, wealthy white women, or just white women in general, are far more likely to be diagnosed and to seek treatment for eating disorders than women of color, men, LGBTQ people. Like, white women are because for so long that was how the disease was seen, it's been really difficult to get over the stigma of that. So there's a really cool initiative happening right now that I think has the potential to really change what's out there. So the National Eating Disorders Association has just announced the Marginalized Voices Project. And this is a project that is going to collect the stories of people who have eating disorders who don't feel like their story has been shared. And part of this is to fill the void of the lack of resources out there for people who aren't young white women. And that's not to say that young white wealthy women aren't deserving of help. They absolutely are. But if you are a middle-aged Asian woman or middle-aged Asian man, let's go even crazier, and you want to try to find help, you're not going to see a picture of someone who looks like you on a website. You're not going to see stories of recovery from somebody who's in your position, who understands what you're going through. So this project is going to be really important to provide that for people who may be seeking help and seeking some kind of community, and to know that they're not alone. They don't have to be so isolated. So if you're interested, if you are thinking that this might be a good place for you to share your story, you should go to nationaleatingdisorders.org/marginalized-voices-project and submit your story. They have some rules and regulations about what you can and can't put in there. Like, basically you have to keep triggering information out of your story. But it could be really, really, it could be cathartic for you as an individual, and it also will be certainly helpful for other people to be able to read the stories that are collected through this. So let's talk a little bit about men and eating disorders now. For a long time, it was thought that only about 10% of the people who sought treatment for eating disorders would be men. And it's been shown in subsequent studies that that's really wrong, and it's closer to 1 in 4, 1 in 3 people who have eating disorders are men. That totally shatters the stereotype that we have of eating disorders being all about women wanting to be thin, which is not the case. So some of this could be attributed to kind of like a hyper-masculine image of men that is so prevalent. Getting the kind of super muscular body that we see on TV and movies, magazines and stuff, that requires like such low body fat percentage to be able to see muscle definition like that. And that kind of self-imposed pressure can lead to an eating disorder. And there's also, I mean, we used to think that, certainly women are bombarded with medical procedures that they can use to make themselves more traditionally beautiful. But now men are getting pec implants, they're getting calf implants. Like, this stuff is now being marketed towards men as well. Something that's really, that's very important to note is that Although gay men comprise, it's estimated that they comprise about 5% of the U.S. population, they're overrepresented in males with eating disorders. So there's something there. We don't know exactly what it is, but there is definitely something going on with being a gay American man and having an eating disorder. Correlation doesn't equal causation, I know that. But that really deserves to be looked at, because that's a lot of people who are suffering, and a lot of people who are going to need a type of care that understands who they are and what their experience has been like. So there, we have to make sure that there are specialists who work with gay men to help them parse out their eating disorder. I want to highlight a couple websites that I found that I thought are really awesome websites for people who feel like they're not represented in the eating disorder recovery community. And the first one is called Black Girl's Guide to Weight Loss. And the subtitle is One Girl's Journey from Couch Potato to Personal Trainer, Nutritionist, and Bikini Competitor. But she writes, she's so cool. Her name is Erica. And she writes all about, like, eating real food. Like, she basically hates all processed food and is a big, like, she is a body image, like, a positive body image advocate. And I think that one of the headlines that I'm looking at right now is called What Rush Limbaugh Has to Say About Michelle Obama and Why I Don't Care, which is pretty great. And I mean, it's other stuff like body image, feeling like you're never enough. Being overweight increases risk of STDs and unplanned pregnancies, ? I mean, she's talking about it all. It's pretty great. And then then the other one is called Thick Dumpling Skin. It's what's on the inside that counts, which, I mean, is true of dumplings. Get a good dumpling filling. That's what matters. Though, you know, the sauce also has a big impact on how good the dumplings are. But anyway, that's for another day. And this is, so it's self-described as a vibrant community for Asian Americans to share and discuss our unhealthy quest, past and present, for the quote, perfect body. Our struggles with food and body image are not merely about willpower. They're social, cultural, and familial. And this website is also great. I read an incredibly powerful post, actually in response to the Woody Allen and Dylan Farrow stuff that's going on. It's called Outing the Dead. And if you have a stomach of steel, give it a read, because it's about childhood trauma and how much that impacts children and can cause them to develop eating disorders. But this is, again, this is a great resource because it provides stories and pictures and community for a group of people who generally aren't represented when we talk about eating disorders. So let's talk about how to get help. The first thing that I would encourage you to do if you or someone you love is suffering from something that's not quite right with their eating. We don't have to call it an eating disorder at this point because we don't have a diagnosis. But if you're concerned about your own or somebody else's eating, if you can, if there's somebody in your life who you can reach out to and say, I need some help, you should do that. Because knowing that there's someone out there who's got your back is going to be so crucial for the recovery process. And just to be clear, I'm not a therapist. I'm not saying that I'm an expert on eating disorders or anything, but I do know that if you feel like you have somebody who cares about you and cares about your recovery, that's going to make a huge difference. Then because I don't know where you live, I can't give you city specific information. So I'm going to tell you that you should call the helpline for the National Eating Disorders Association. And the number for that is 1-800-931-2237. And they're open from 9 to 9, Monday through Thursday, and from 9 to 5 on Friday. And they help you, they'll connect you with the resources that you need. So they're basically like a national clearinghouse for information about eating disorders, about eating disorder treatment. And they can kind of like help you figure things out, what to do next. There's also tons and tons of information on their website, which is nationaleatingdisorders.org. A ton of what I was just talking with you about is from their website. And there's so much more. I wish that I could cover everything. I wish that I had unlimited time and brain space to be able to put it all in here. But alas, I do not. So if you think that I didn't explain something well or correctly, or I missed something that's really important to include, let me know and I'll be sure to mention it next time. So this has been wonderful. I hope that you have enjoyed my musings on eating disorders for National Eating Disorder Awareness Week. And I really look forward to hearing your feedback on this type of episode. This was, I'll be honest, this was a little scary for me. I didn't think I could talk for this long by myself. So I've learned something important about myself today, which is that I can talk for a long time. If I've spent the last 3 days researching a topic, you should see how many tabs open I have in Chrome right now. I have like 25 tabs. Google is going to think that I don't know what they're going to think about me. Considering the wide variety of things that I research, I'm sure that they and the NSA are tracking me and trying to figure out what's wrong with me. This has been lovely, and I'm so glad that you are still listening to me and my ramblings. So thanks for tuning in, and I'll be back with you next week. Thanks so much for listening to Action Phase. You can find me, Tegan, on Twitter at Tegan Keating. That's TEAGANKEATING. And on my site, TeganK.com. You can find Action Phase on Twitter at ActionPhasePod and on ActionPhasePodcast.com. You can feel free to email me at ActionPhasePodcast@gmail.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll talk to you again soon.